So last time when I made my talk, I spent all my time talking about something which was done 10 years ago, actually the mess itself. And I didn't have time to present any results. So this is my opportunity now. Well, I choose this topic called Vanadates, and there are actually two parts of it. One is exchange couplings in the family of calcium vanadates, and another one is Condor energy scale for spinel, lithium vanadium 204. So both were recently published. So, first, well, those vanadates. It's a whole family of them, as you see. And they are two-dimensional systems. And, for example, this one is analog of ladders. This one could be looked upon as combined of plaquettes, squares.
Ladders? You said it was a something ladders, I didn't hear the word.
Ladder. Like ladder.
Okay, you said it was some sort of ladder. What was the
crystal
word?
Structure. Crystal structure is like ladder. It's not okay. Its proper, yeah.
Plaquettes, you said plaquettes.
You see, that's problem with native speakers. Yeah? I don't understand you, don't understand me. But foreign understand perfectly. Yeah? two of them, 409 and 205, have spin gaps, and 205 has huge spin gap, even much larger than a spin gap in cuprate ladder. And it's surprising because that is pi bonds, and everybody, in contrast to sigma bonds here, and everybody expects that sigma bonds would give you strong interactions. Magnesium 205 has very small spin gap, but still something. And everybody was very much interested in this 409, because it also has spin gap. And in contrast to this one, where it's small, it's clear what kind of ground state it is. Here it was not clear at all. And this 307 is very funny because it has long range. It's also antiferromagnetic structure, and indeed it's very funny because it has as antiferromagnetic as ferromagnetic interactions in it. Now, how crystal structure looks like? That would be on the 409. So we have layers of vanadium oxide layers. Between layers you have calcium ions. So those layers are completely decoupled covalently. So there are no covalent bonding between them. The basic element of the structure is the pyramid. And the vanadium ion is in the pyramid. So it's not octahedral anymore. It's not distorted octahedral, it's something completely different. That's how angle distribution of d orbitals looks like in those compounds. I would first say that it is d1 systems. So all those compounds have one d electron. All are insulators. So now you see That is this orbital. It's this famous XY orbitals. The same basic element of structure is in this sodium vanadate, famous sodium vanadate, and that's pyramid. And why in this particular XY orbital? That's because it's quite simple crystal field analysis will show you that only if you have axis directed to oxygen, X, Y, and Z, then only this orbital is as far away from any oxygen as possible. And the result, crystal field splitting is strong. It's so strong that in normal LDA band structure, this band would be separated completely from the whole rest of it. So just crystal field alone immediately produces separation of XY band. So all other bands could forget about them. And now, so we have half field XY band, and it could be splitted and produce insulator even without U. And even exchange splitting is enough to open the gap here.
What do you mean by that? Even exchange splitting?
I mean that in standard LSDA calculations. So you don't need a Coulomb correlation, don't put Coulomb correlation here, in order to reproduce magnetic insulator. And that's not usual. In many cases, a standard LSDA will not give you insulator. But here not. Here, the bands are so narrow, well separated orbitally, very narrow, and in the result, normal Stoner, Hund's rule, is enough to open a gap and produce stable magnetic structure. Sodium vanadate has the same basic elements. It's actually has nearly the same structure as calcium vanadium 205. The major difference is that you have for sodium vanadate one electron per two ions. That's it. And for calcium vanadate you have one electron per side. So that while for calcium vanadate you have standard mod insulator, no problems at all. And for sodium vanadate you have problem of charge ordering and so on. But crystallography is the same. And in the end, everything could be boiled down or downfolded to one XY orbital per side. It's very good approximation here, one band. I would like to emphasize that it's not some sketch, it's just a result of our calculations. So we perform full-scale calculations and then plotted D density in three-dimensional space. That's the result.
They were precisely calculations, LDA distribution?
It's the same. It's not important. As I told you, in contrast to many other things, that LSDA and LDA plus U will give qualitatively the same. The only difference will be quantitative, the value of splitting in occupied and unoccupied bands. And then I will show that's important. That's important for numbers.
You're showing the spin density, right? So
yes, yeah, it's spin density. Yeah. But it's the same, spin density, spin density better because then you subtract covalent, yes, that's spin density. Yeah, so.
Describe this buckling of these fender bonds there.
Yeah, it's important, yeah, it's important.
How does the, have you minimized the structure?
No, we didn't minimize the structure. Yeah. We took an experimental one. Yeah.
Do you expect that your structure is stable at that experimental one? Or?
Well, you see, first of all, we used LMTO, which cannot be used for relaxation of structure. And second, we were not interested in it at all.
So you don't know whether it's stable
or
not in your calculation?
Well, I was not interested in it. Not interested in it. Because everybody is in magnetic properties, not crystallographic one. No, but about this buckling, it's the normal steric effect. That's the effect of closing the volume of phosmolar ion. So it's known that, for example, if you would replace calcium by magnesium, as two compounds here, then magnesium atom is smaller than calcium and buckling increases. So it's pure steric effect. So we have more or less rigid pyramids, which are covalently, strongly covalently bound. The bonds here, vanadium oxide, are very short, which is a consequence of very low, very high valency of vanadium. So those pyramids are very rigid, but they are buckled, rotated, and so on.
Mm-hmm. One more question.
Yeah.
You're saying it has a high valency, right?
Yeah.
And there's a sort of Fujimori logic saying that when the valency increases, then there's also, you know, a tendency to become more charge transferred.
No, not here, because vanadium is very high. You still have something like 3-4 EV distance between oxygen band and D band.
Yeah, so it is basically
like a it's most Hubbard, yeah, no problem.
Are there compounds that take some of the calcium out?
Calcium out? And replace by what?
Well, by nothing, having vacancies there.
That would be just V2O5. Yes, there is such compound, yeah. That's what your question.
It would be very empty, and you would have, like, when we talked to Arstok yesterday, you had those possibilities of moving in. Is there anything?
I just asked. No. As I know, V2O5 is quite stable. It's quite stable.
You don't have partial fillings with calcium.
It's a very stable compound. No problem there.
So, you did kind of dig that chain. Is it some basic unit?
Wait, I will show now. Yeah. It just I showed what is generic for this whole family, and now some particular compounds. That's the simplest one. The simplest one is V2O5, and that's ladders. See? It's important to understand that while you see here short distance, but that's short distance when you see above the plane. Those wide and filled circles are above the plane and below the plane. See? Those are above the plane, and those are below the plane. And then it's quite important, the story. It's the same which we saw in sodium vanadate. So if you have XY orbitals, then the orbitals which are on the same plane would interact strongly. But orbitals which are on the different planes would not interact at all. Very, very small, very small interaction. So that here...
The Cook rates, normal Cook rates of X-ray minus widespread, basically,
yes.
Playing and then play interact is pretty weak because you
yes.
Can
yes. So the same story like this. Yeah. So here, it was at first there was misunderstanding, and people look only on distances, yeah? And we were very surprised. Then, when you have short distance, you have weak interaction. And for larger distance, you have larger interaction. That was just pure geometry. Here, this distance is shorter than this distance. But then this interaction is much stronger than this one. Just due to the geometry. So as I said, they're the simplest of those compounds, V2O5. So it's ladders. Yeah. So the strong interactions inside ladders, just because they're on the same side of the plane, and between ladders it's relatively weak.
So I shouldn't think about this mechanism which is active in Cooper's ladder systems, which is about 90 degree
voltages.
Really
yes, something like this, yeah.
But here it's really about different, yeah. Different
planes. It is closed just because in both cases interaction is weak, but not due to the same, not exactly the same reason for it.
You wouldn't argue, I guess, that VJ1 is supposed to be a ferromagnetic exchange?
Between letters? Yes, we got it, that's ferromagnetic. So,
it's still a good Kanamori rule.
Yes, yes. I'm not sure that Kanamori will be valid here. Kanamori thought about 90 degrees. It's not 90 degrees. It's very not, it's not clear at all what it is, yeah, when you have different planes.
Which is the ladder
here? J2, J3, that's lead. That's leg, that's ramp. Well, first of all, I should show.
Why is
V2
much bigger than
V3? Wait a moment. First, I should show how did we make calculation. Oh, yeah, that's it. How we calculate the exchange? That was formula which was derived by Sascha Lichtenstein. Well, in the paper with Jan and me. So the idea is the following. So you map LD plus U total energy on Heisenberg model. Well, and then you calculate analytically second derivative of total energy as a function of the angle between moments. Okay. And then it is possible to calculate the second derivative for the angle equals zero for collinear structure. And that would be this. Okay. So it would be splitting on I side, exchange splitting. Exchange splitting on Y, J side. And then a kind of susceptibility. It's more general because it's not just exchange splitting, it's a matrix of all orbitals. So if you will apply this for two-side model, then you will have T squared divided by U. The only problem is that it's important problem, that as it is Hartree-Fock Minifield approximation, then what you will have singlet triplet splitting in mean field, which is twice as small as exact value. And
what do you mean by that? What's the singlet triplet splitting in mean field?
Hartree-Fock. If you calculate.
Like the Yale.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's just the Yale versus.
Just a classical space splitting, you'll get the classical spaces.
Nope. Well, it's I would not confuse it. Classical quantum spins. I would say that when we try to solve two-side problem and we know exact solution, total energy, different spin, singlet and triplet, and we know the result from Hartree-Fock, from mean field. And Hartree-Fock result underestimated two times this difference. That's it.
That's only for two-side. I
mean, yes. But that's, you see, that's fast. That's fast.
In a large U limit, when you are in this light, actually, it's very well known that the U field of Hartree-Fock large S and maps the system onto the classical.
Yeah, some you can say so, yeah. It leads to the same result, that it underestimates twice. And then we included this coefficient in our calculus. So then, when we had this pair contribution, we multiply by a factor of 2 in order to cure this Hartree-Fock deficiency. So I should emphasize here that in contrast to normal way of calculating those exchange, when you calculate total energy, ferromagnetic, antiferromagnetic, then map it, it's analytical. So we just have wave functions, we have spectrum, and that's enough. That's enough to calculate all exchange parameters. Well, so now, returning to V2O5, here, just due to geometry, rank interaction is much stronger than leg interaction. So, we have actually weakly coupled dimers. And that agrees quite well. Yeah? J2 is rank.
Right.
Rank. It is the strongest interaction.
From letter to letter.
You want to come
to
think?
Yeah.
So that's ladder.
And where do
so that's rank, and that's leg.
Yeah. I'm just confused because
J3 is lag. J3 is lag. This one and this one.
Both,
But then J1 couples different letters together?
Yes, J1 couples letters together and it's ferromagnetic.
So letters
are not weakly coupled? Mm-hmm. It's weakly coupled dimers. It's not letters. See, we interpret our results not as a letters, but as weakly coupled dimers. So the coupling of leg and coupling between us is of the same order, so it's not letters anymore, it's dimers.
But the geometrical ladders run parallel to the geometrical ladders from the BS.
So white are on the same side, and those gray are on the same
so
side.
So they are all parallel.
Yes, yeah. That's all one plane. Okay. That's all one plane.
So I guess it is like weakly coupled dimers, not like letters.
Yes. Yes. Yes, that's weakly coupled dimers, yeah, that's exactly
this. You spell it if you run it.
Not technically, you're sacrificed.
Is there a neutron scattering data on this?
Yes, this particular compound was well investigated, and we did even more with the help of Matthias Troyer from Zurich. He has very nice code for quantum Monte Carlo or Heisenberg model. So he took our parameters and calculated susceptibility. And then we experimental susceptibility and our theoretical one. This one is impurity. So just forget about it.
Is quantum Monte Carlo a three-dimensional system?
It's not a three-dimensional, it's two-dimensional. Two-dimensional.
Now, is it where you were subtracting the purity contribution?
That would be very perfect, much better.
It helps to make it seem a little more picky.
No, not here. Impurity are important only here.
Why is there an offset? I mean, it seems that there's a purity contribution plus low energy stuff in kind.
Which
seems to be sort of flat at
lower temperatures. This one?
Yeah.
I should look at my papers, but it seems that it was done once, subtraction of impurity, and that it was quite good.
Yeah.
It's come down, there's no flatness.
The uniform susceptibility is not really a very sensitive measure of the exchange constants.
No, let us say that Johnson from Ames, he did quite extensive investigation of this compound, and then he also used susceptibility, other terms, but still he got the same result, that weakly coupled dimers is very good approximation here. But neutrons, actually, and I don't know neutrons here. Yeah. Neutrons were done for 409, that's it, but not for this compound. Then this 409, this is 409, and 409 is much more complicated. Historically, people first saw that those plaquettes were this small one, because they have the shortest distance, but they are on the different size of plane, so the result, as in reality, is larger metaplaquettes, which connect atoms on the same side of the plane. That is the strongest interaction. Actually, that was discovered by Warren Pickett, who did calculations for those exchange, but as I told, not in our model, but in total energy calculation for different configuration of spins. So he extracted also that is the strongest interaction. But
if I may sort of look at it, I would say this is basically like a two-dimensional spin system.
As I told, the strongest in the plaquette, but it's not weakly coupled plaquette, it's strongly coupled plaquette. So, yes, this J3 is at least twice as large as the next one, but still, all of them are quite strong. So, you cannot say that it's a weakly coupled plaquette, it's strongly coupled plaquette.
What's J4? Where is it?
So, what is the question? J4? Which one is J4? This one is diagonal. This diagonal. Yeah. That's exactly a coupling between plaquettes on the same side of the.
I guess people sort of Weda from the IHSB in Tokyo was talking about the model.
Whom?
Weda.
Weda, yes. A lot of people work on this compound.
So how does these results influence that whole description?
No, you see, that the fact that the strongest attraction ion, this meta plaquette, is generally accepted. But then there are a lot of discussion how to properly describe magnum spectra. That's exactly your question. Yeah? For this compound, there are magnum spectra. And actually, our results and all others' results still cannot do it properly. But we again did calculations for susceptibility. So we got peak more or less in the proper place, just overestimated weight. So, but still, we hope that's satisfactory.
I find it apply so much in the susceptibility that the huge difference. I mean, you integrate it up, you get the total spin.
I find it a lot of
crossing. But look here, it is not fitting, see?
No,
if you want to fit, you could fit perfectly. It's some initial calculations.
I find it surprising that the spin gaps actually is so, so large. You would say the Kelly spinnings are smaller compared to diamond single grip spinnings.
There is still
some. Yet it is still coupling between the plaquettes, and I would actually expect it that it should be pretty close to the end effect. Hence this whole spin gap. Why is the spin gap so large?
Model people actually, Matthias Stroyer did a lot of model calculations where you have plaquettes and interaction between plaquettes, and they have found that the ratio of interplaquette interaction, which would kill the spin gap, is still quite large. So you could have something like 1/2, and it still will be there. So you need something 0.67. The ratio, which would kill spin gap.
So it's over letters, it's simply like the letter coupling ratio, like 0.3.
But for plaquette, it's something 0.6, yeah. Plaquette. Something like 0.6.
So these exchange, I'm not sure I understand what these exchange constants come from your theory.
Yes.
And then they're just put into a quantum model.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I guess you have some sort of error bars on your exchange constants.
Error bars are here, it's quantum Monte Carlo error bars.
Does a quantum Monte Carlo, but do you have an estimate?
an estimate
of how precise, how accurate your numbers
are? Actually, it is impossible to say.
And how that might change.
You see, we cannot say that we have such and such error bar because we have just some approximation for calculating electronic structure. And okay, what kind of error bars? Numerical error bars are negligible. And then how we could estimate error bars of approximation?
Yeah. what I would call systematic errors.
Well, systematic errors in what? Compare these experiments?
No, but come on. I mean, you're asking me to believe that this is a good approximation, but I want to know,
how good? The only way is the following. You do 100 calculations and compare the 100 experiments. And then you make statistics,
Throw out one of the J's. Just throw out one of the J's. Can you get a better fit or worse fit? I don't know.
It is not fit at all. Don't understand. It's not a fit.
It's a fit of your approximation, right?
No. See, look here, it is not a fit. And that is the beauty of it. You just make an initial calculation, two parameters, and see how good they are.
But something's not working, right?
Half people try to fit the QMC.
The
neutron scattering people had a fit.
Yeah.
Later.
No, the fitting, there was a lot of fittings,
But I was asking about the specific heat.
Specific heat, everything was fitted,
But when people try to fit the cup, maxes. What is the J that they get? I mean, can you remind us of what J you can get by fitting the curve?
You see, the problem with fitting is if you have one dominated exchange, then you have one parameter, and then fitting obtained for calcium V205 was perfect. It agreed quite well with our result because it was just one parameter. Now we have at least four parameters. Yeah?
Yeah, one you can scale out, right?
Still it is three. Still, in the result, if you have three, at least three independent parameters, you can have it.
I mean, the only way is to get more information, get more information by doing neutral sketching. Neutral sketching, pretty much look at this, the differential estimates for these exchange constants. How do you compare?
We compared more reasonably well, but still there are some discrepancies between them. See, look here, this problem of neutron scattering. You have magnons, yeah? Magnon spectra. Then you say, let us take such parameters and make fitted for magnons. And then they use formula which is valid only in some limits.
Which limits?
Weakly coupled plaquettes.
Okay.
See? And then it expand in this ratio and write some formulas which they fit.
Well, but to the extent that you're saying that J3 is 156 and gap is 110, it is a weakly coupled plaquette.
No, the weakly coupled plaquette is the ratio, you see? That's the ratio.
That's substantial. There must be frustration. It's somehow still behaving as more or less weakly coupled because your gap scale is still about J3.
Yeah.
If the gap was much smaller, then of course that perturbation theory would be down.
Okay, let us say the following. Yeah. It is still unclear if it would be perfect fitting for neutron scattering, for sensibility, so then we would compare our initial result with this perfect fitting. The answer is that there is no perfect fitting.
But it's some fit.
Some fit, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Some fit, yeah.
How bad is it? I mean, it's difficult to tell us. Mm. Neutral scattering has been done, right? Mm. When you use these parameters for trying to get anywhere with neutral scattering, how good or how bad is it?
Either that or you compare your calculation with neutron scattering.
Well, we cannot make neutron scattering because for neutron scattering you need to calculate spin waves. See? And that could be done only with some approximations.
So
you cannot calculate spin waves in quantum Monte Carlo.
What's the problem? Numerically, it can be done practically exactly for this system.
No, not for this system. No.
Yes, it can.
No. Well, so show me a reference where it was calculated exact magnons. Yes. No, look here. As far as I know, there are expansions.
Yeah.
This expansion is not exact.
It's not
far
exact,
from B.
It's numerically exact as long as your gap is that big.
I just want to know how better
it is.
Right?
The accuracy of that numerical expansion would be as good as any other numerical calculation that you do.
No, I'm not sure.
Only when the gap becomes small, that's when the expansion starts to break down, and then it will not be very accurate.
That expansion in this relative coupling between letters, plaquettes. Well, okay.
This tells what is neutral structures, the better it is to go. The metal special, what kind of tentacles do we have?
We were quite close. Not exactly. But I don't remember numbers now. Look here. No. It's much less than factor of two. Less than factor of two.
So you talk about 10%.
Something like 50% maximum. Maximum derivation 50%.
I guess an F is that.
Yeah.
Are the
signs the same signs of the exchange constant?
You see. This ratio is more or less close, but those smaller one, that you have a lot of freedom. And that's exactly what I told you. If you have one parameter, it will be perfectly fitted. If you have three parameters, you could have very good fit if you will vary some ratios quite considerably. That is the story. That is the problem. that when you have complicated enough system, then fitting is not...
If you set J1 and J2 to 0, can you look at your previous plot of what J... What is the topology of just having J3 and J4? Is that frustrated?
You mean, would be frustrated?
So I said J1 and J2 to 0. Is the system frustrated with J3 and J4?
No.
No, if you have just... Yeah, so you have plaquettes and interaction between plaquettes. It will be frustrated, yeah.
I disagree. If you have just J3 and J4, right, that's within one of the layers.
Right. Right.
So you have and each of those layers, when you remove the one out of every five spikes, each of those layers it is itself the same kind of piling of little squares and big squares.
No, as I know, people exactly investigate this system when you have plaquettes which are coupled. And that's frustrated system. It cannot be done long range. You cannot make long-range interaction.
All I'm asking is, by frustrating, I mean, are there triangles of bonds such that there's an odd number of negative bonds? I mean...
Oh, well, this is a terminological question.
By frustrating, I mean,
there is no long-range order. That's the statement.
Mm-hmm. The question was whether it was frustrated.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not frustrated.
So no, it's magnetically it's frustrated. You cannot write down some simple long-range order which would be lowest total energy.
If you just have J3 and J4, it is not frustrated.
I saw that frustrated.
This letter,
no? No, if you just have J3 and J4, that's back to the system that Ueda and many other people studied. Just the bigger plaquettes coupled by the diamond bonds, right?
Yes, yes. And so frustrated.
That is not frustrated.
So you have long-range order?
Well, one knows very accurately what is the ratio of J3 to J4 at which long range order would set in. That number is very angry.
Mm-hmm.
And that number is very close to actually 0.6 or so. I don't remember it very well.
Mm-hmm.
So your system would essentially be long range order if it was not for the J1 and J2.
No. Oh, that's
wait, nobody has studied the J1 and J2 in your model carefully, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, take Matthias Floyer's result, if you like the Monte Carlo model. I mean, he has also, if you just have the J3 and J4, that maps back to a model that people have studied quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they studied mostly, you know, taking the small packet and something by the diamond.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just have J3 and J4, it maps back to the same model.
Yeah. It's possible.
But in that model, one knows that at a certain ratio of J3 to J4,
mm-hmm.
the gap will close and the system will go into an
anti-parametric
phase.
Oh, you mean that for certain ratio? Yes, that's agree. Yeah.
And I suspect that your ratio is very close to that, and it might be on the ordered side.
Yeah. No, Matthias' result was that there is no long range order for very low temperature. So that's spin gap system. For these our parameters.
Well, but his results are really only reliable without the J1 and J2, without frustration.
No, I talk about results with full four parameters, naturally.
Yeah, but the Monte Carlo doesn't work so well when you have frustration.
No, but that's my point, it's frustrated.
When you have J1 and J2, but
yes,
you drop J1 and J2, which you don't know so well, anyway.
Yeah.
So suppose you drop it.
Well, look here. Let us make it clear. All those systems were investigated by many people, yeah? On model level. They took this J, that J, what would be magnons, what would be sensibility. It was not my task. Eh? See, it was not my job. My job was the following. Let us try to make first principle correction for parameters and see how good or bad they are.
You're just curious
about this. But you have to compare with something to know how good or bad they
are. I just compared with sensibility. That's it.
That's the susceptibility you would get with almost any parameter.
That's not true.
Anything which has the same order of magnitude for the J's will give you that susceptibility.
Yeah.
So it doesn't tell you
any
one-dimensional
chain.
Mm. Mm.
Actually, you can just take a linear chain and you'll get that susceptibility. You can take a ladder and you'll get that susceptibility.
But, okay, so let us say... Do you claim that for system 409 there are reliable set of parameters which we say I want to compare?
Why don't we let him go on though?
Yeah.
Really getting into the minutia.
I like to see you guys very excited now as a serious question because of the access you hit said this is sort of 50% or 10%. Well, that parameter is what you would expect from LDXU is on the set, right?
Yeah.
So let's be pretty happy about it.
Mm.
There's some other pity that there's some sort of more detailed comparison. I can sort of see that it's frustration seems coming in because it's just interesting from the point of view of the physical system.
It's clear that if you want to make fit, the fit will be much better than our initial calculations. It's clear. I did not want to compete with fitting. Yeah, that shows that ab initio can good reasonable result.
Okay,
fine. Unfortunately, I have not with me here transparency for system. Vanadium 307, and that's quite interesting system because there you have long range order, but long range order with ferromagnetic and antiferromagnetic bonds, and in order to explain it, that first people were forced to invent some quantum fluctuations, quantum effects, because they could not imagine there could be ferromagnetic interactions, and we obtained exactly this. That some bonds are ferromagnetic, some are anti-ferromagnetic.
But again, you need neutron scattering. I mean, you know, if you just compare with something like susceptibility, I wouldn't necessarily...
No, here we not compare susceptibility, we compare susceptibility too, but in this case, we know low temperature, long-range structure.
Yeah, but you can get that from other things also. I mean, I know that what Ueda and company invoked was a non-trivial fluctuation, but it was for that reason very interesting. Mm-hmm. Now you're saying that there's almost a trivial explanation because
yes.
You know the couplings are
yes.
Sometimes ferromagnetic. But
so what is bad?
There is an easy way to distinguish, and that is by neutron scattering.
But if you would have neutron scattering, fine. Do you say that there are? We didn't find neutron scattering.
If you don't compare the neutron scattering for CAB409, you're probably not likely to compare it for CAB307.
But there is no neutron data.
I mean, you know, you have
so you suggest me to come immediately down neutron scattering? Yeah? What do you suggest for me to do?
No, I mean, you should suggest that people should do.
Okay, I suggest people do neutron scattering, okay?
And when they do that, you should.
It's fine, and then I will compare, yeah?
And if it doesn't agree, then.
Fine. But what to do now, yeah? Now compare with what you know, and we know. Long-range structure.
Susceptibility comparison doesn't really mean anything.
Fine. We compare with what is known, see?
Yeah. In other systems where you apply the method, and there are interest patterns, how good does it
mean? Oh, it's a potassium copper fluorine, which we did with Jan and Sasha Lichtenstein. They're quite good. Yeah. Then we did for cuprates. They're also quite good. Yeah.
I mean, you have to be, you know, all the attributes gives you ballpark estimates. It can excite qualitative issues by ferromagnetic interaction or producing more interesting, right?
What is the structure of this
right,
one? Which one? 307.
What is the structure?
No, it's a kind of Srilex.
You don't have that.
Srilex. You see, you just don't understand what we wanted to do. We wanted first to show that it is possible to obtain ab initio parameters which are reasonable. It's not our aim to just to have those numbers. Yes, those numbers could be much better obtained by fitting to experiment. But our...
But that's not the point. I mean, the only point I'm raising is, you know, fine, you got those numbers, but whether those are right or not, the only way to tell that is by comparing to neutron scattering. There's just no other way.
Fine. That's what could be done for.
Suppose these are right numbers.
Yeah.
You seem to believe that they're right. What do you think could cause the difference between the susceptibility of measuring and calculating?
What is the source of the difference?
What's the source of the difference?
Well, just because we have a lot of approximations on the road to those comparison.
So you think it's more likely that the numbers are slightly different, or do you think that there's new physics?
No, it is just about approximations. We had a lot of approximations which you use in calculating, you see?
So numbers
it's ab initio, but it's not the exact solution.
So numbers are slightly different, you are saying, right?
Yeah, slightly different, no. The agreement, the experiment is not perfect because we did not use exact solution of Schrödinger equation. That's it. And the measure of deviation from theoretical central curve is a measure of a mistake or error of our approximation, that's it.
I mean, you can also, I guess, look at it, there's this sort of long, long, long history of trying to get a qualitative number for superchains.
No.
And I had this reputation, they're really hard to get. They're small numbers, right? And they're made out of very big numbers, right? So when you make small errors in big numbers, you get big errors in small numbers. Then the story here is really that, you know, it's L, the A plus U and there is really sort of saying it's not a good idea to think that I think it may like number models. That's the physics you stick in. And the pretty good ballpark estimates for these exchange constants. It makes me happy. You cannot ask that, you know, since are we seeing, you know, 5% of the course.
No, but one thing that I do worry about is, I mean, with four parameters, it seems to me you could switch signs here and there.
Yeah.
And then that changes the complete nature of how the plaquettes develop, right? Whether they're chains or plaquettes or whatever, right? And that's the thing. There are many ways of getting gaps. and that goes to the basic description of the physics of how this fits.
But that's exactly my point, that if you have just four parameters, you could explain experiment with a lot of combination of those parameters.
Sure.
But that is fitting. I don't have fit, you see? I have straightforward calculation. So if my results are such and such, it's not fitting.
No, but you're telling us that you know that the parameters aren't really exact. I mean, can I switch?
No, they're not exact.
And then you have ferromagnetic and anti-ferromagnetic.
No, look here. So the question is, if I would change my approximation, yeah, wouldn't that change results? Yes, it would. But I have one clear approximation.
Yeah.
And that. Then no, if one would use another approximation, that would have another number.
You haven't tested the robustness of even the sign. I mean, can you
test on what? What do you mean to test?
The robustness of the fit, however good it is.
But it's not fit.
It's not a fit. Calculation, simulation, whatever you want to call
it. But I have no parameters to change. Do you understand that?
But you would like to.
You see?
How robust is it? If I switch...
What to change what? I have nothing to change, you see? To change one hand, what?
The question is,
your numbers are... I will not fit in, you see?
It's simple. I mean, it's really very simple. At this moment, there are these numbers lying out there that are not really being tested by this calculation for sensitivity. Rajiv has made a point, the way to test it is by looking at the neutral scattering and seeing that at least the size and the reason that there's a gap is right, and that can be nailed down, and that is supposed to be future work, I hope.
Right. Yeah, that's
so
what I'm saying.
You know, because Troy has not the sensitivity, everything is proven, it's definitely not quite right.
Actually, your question is so that we don't know how good our results are before we made a neutron scattering.
By factors of 10, they may be off by sign, so how do we know how much of that to trust? I mean, like you said, you get an order of magnitude.
This system was done by Warren, wasn't it?
No.
Also.
Yeah.
But he wasn't using LDA as you.
He was using LDA and he got results which are twice as large.
The question is that. There you have a comparison.
Yeah.
There you have a comparison. There you have a perfect comparison where you don't apply in U and you just apply the normal LDA.
LSDA is more shit than LSU. LSDA is more shit than LSU.
No, I mean, that's
you
something down. No, I'm not saying it's good or bad, Jana. What I'm saying is that here we have the possibility of seeing what he
So then the answer is, when Warren used his numbers, that he definitely obtained twice as large as needed.
Everyone just twice?
Yes, if his result would be just divided by 2, they would be more or less better, much
were
better.
Were all the signs the same?
I just look for those two main numbers, yeah.
Those my good feeling would be that it's far harder to get the overall scale right than to get the relative ratios of the exchange constants. I mean, the opal scale is really the hard part in this definition. But basically, the opal scale is sort of right. It's not 1,000 Kelvin, it's not 10 Kelvin, it's sort of 100 Kelvin.
Yeah, but with four constants.
So, when I would like to place a bet for the betting book, and the betting book, and the bet would be that, you know, when you compare the Snoopy scattering, it's sort of the qualitative structure, like the sign of the exchange constant, the relative magnitude, the significance, etc., are basically rising in the population.
I would not bet on 50%,
But with four exchange constants, there's a lot of competition here, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of ways you can get singlets forming. Right? seems to me, I mean, all the exchange constants are in the same order of magnitude.
Yes.
And you've got different numbers of neighbors and stuff. Mm. And so whether it's, you know, whether you really have high hats or dimers or whatever, seems to me.
Well, but still, it's not my job to say this dimers or plaquettes so on. I just make numbers, try to compare them with what is known, and say, look, here's unreasonable. That's it. And then that's why those orbital regressions are needed. Then we could play with it. We could switch off this orbital, that orbital. So we could say that this interaction, this number, is a consequence of this and this orbital interactions, you see. That's why Rabinovich calculations are needed. Because that as soon as we got a reasonable number, then we could play with them and explain this origin of those couplings.
Is there anything known about the phonons in this system? And you know, how do these phonons change with temperature?
No, nobody talked about phonons in this system.
It seems, probably
no, at least nobody was interested in it. It seems that it's like normal, no anomalies. Everywhere is in only in magnetic interactions. Stability, spinons, and magnons, and so on. No, not entirely. As I told you, that's the most clear thing here is that just crystal structure is pyramid, immediately split off one orbital, and very strongly split off. So you could forget about everything. There was no orbital polarization, no orbital degeneracy there at all. It's a very clear case. So again, it seems that I don't have time for my second part, yeah? Well, at least I function. I'm happy that I got the opportunity to present my new results. It's not always possible. Usually I come to some place and say, I have interesting new results. No. Let us go to the back to the J plus U and its equations. So,
yeah. Another plus B question. The experimental crystal structure data always have error bars and diarrhea. There's all problems with the composition and so forth. If you were to vary your lattice parameters within these error bars, how do the... I would like...
That's an interesting question, yeah.
We should try. How would these parameters change?
We did not do this, but we compare results for calcium vanadium 205 and magnesium 205. Structures are practically the same, only a slight change of angles.
Right.
Yeah? And results can dramatically change. So dramatically.
Sensitive to the local conformation.
Local what?
Conformation.
What even conformation?
The local structure.
Just uncertainties of structure. Just to structure itself is very sensitive.
Well, let's say I dope it a little bit, I have a little bit of defect, I'll make all sorts of local changes.
No, I gave you an example that you have calcium vanadium 205 and magnesium 205. The structure change quite small, it's few degrees of difference of angles, that's it. Maybe. Was something like 160 and 165, nothing more. And a dramatic change of parameters, dramatic. In one we have something like 600 K exchange, and another we have less than 100.
From an experimental point of view, how people be doing uniaxial pressure experiments for specific
heat
or
sensitive? I don't aware of such experiments, no pressure. Maybe it did, but I don't know such
neutrons. What other examples?
Easier to do neutrons than what the experiment you
just
described.
What other examples? Are there
very
heat?
I have no
oxygen
no idea.
There was a lot of sensitivity, and then was one neutron scattering for 409. Nothing more, unfortunately. That's strange because a lot of interest here, but nothing was done.
I guess sort of the question is, so you're saying that in the finite system there's sort of a quite interesting variety.
Yes,
it's a strong sensitivity into detail function matters. I mean, do you dare to say that all the A plus U can sort of be the big trends, right?
Here, in contrast to all other systems, here LDA plus U doesn't make qualitative difference, only quantitative.
Yeah,
and quantitative is a form. I think it's still important that it increases the split in the occupied and occupied state. So that if you have that J is T squared divided by delta, where delta is splitting, of occupied and unoccupied state, then LDA plus U would decrease the, just the values. And that was demonstrated that we have twice a smaller value of exchange coupling as Warren did with LDA.
You can answer my question. It's sort of clear to me what you were saying. The question is just if the sort of LDA orbital structure, right, is sufficiently right, that the subtle changes in Kissel structure, which are translated into big changes in the change
Quantum,
can be reproduced by the method of Kissel.
Yes. That's what we demonstrated, as I told, on calcium vanadium 205 and magnesium vanadium 5. Right. Very subtle change in crystal structure, just slight tiltings, immediately lead to the experimental situation when you have huge spin gap and very small spin gap, and we reproduce it. Yeah.
But that was after the experiment. So you have to
I agree, perfectly agree with that. If you would make predictions, become famous. Yeah,
but can you put your finger on what the physics that the plus U brings in? What is, what's the source of the sensitivity? Is it the
Plus U has nothing to do with it. This qualitative change we would have also if we have LSD plus U. As I told, for this particular...
LSD, the extra...
You mean why tilting leads to decreasing of
photons? Is it quantum fluctuation?
No, it is just overlapping, you see? If you have this overlapping and not you have that overlapping. That's it, nothing more.
Successive LDA more than
anything else. It's just LDA. We did the paper with Stuttgart people where they have downfolding procedure, so they have full scale calculation, then they downfold on one band model, on three band model, so that you could follow how Hopkins changed.
Yes.
And those Hopkins immediately followed that. Hopkins had twice as small in magnesium system. In the result, exchange are four times smaller.
Yes.
So this small change of angle leads to a strong decrease in Hopkins.
Okay.
That's pure LDA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could we hear just say 10 or 5 minutes of the lithium?
Yes, if you are ready, I will be happy. I will try to make it quite short. Just to remind what it is, it's lead heavy fermion system without F electrons, and it has all properties, all signatures of heavy fermion, strongly enhanced gamma, susceptibility, and everything else. And also, you see, that's an interesting story, that you have here configuration D1.5. You would expect mixture of D1 and D2. But for high temperatures, you see Curie-Weiss with spin 1/2. No traces of D2 configuration. Well, and for low temperatures, it's normal condo system, everything screened, no local moments. So now, that's the basic element of crystal structure. So you have octahedra around vanadium, and those octahedra are connected to form tetrahedra. So that vanadium atoms form tetrahedra. And that is the basic motif of crystal structure. So you have four vanadium atoms in unit cell. So it's cubic. It's total symmetry is cubic.
It's the same as the pyrophore structure.
It's spinel. Spinel.
It's the same. The B side of the spinel is the same as the A or B side of the
Then we have the following. D level is split on EG to TG. Yeah. And you have the total symmetry, or not total, the local symmetry of vanadium ion is trigonal. So actually, T to G must be split into non-degenerate A1G and W-degenerate EG. I just make different capital letters and small letters to distinguish between representation of cubic group and trigonal group. So that is the band structure. So that you have oxygen band, then you have T to G, partially filled T to G band, and completely empty EG band. You see, they are very well separated. You could completely forget about EG. You have narrow T to G band, which is partially filled. And that was a mystery. How could you have heavy Fermion behavior when you have just partially filled T to G band, nothing else? So, and that, next, that's what we suggest how to understand it.
Because you would think that this would be a normal Fermi liquid.
Let us say that for a heavy fermion, you need localized states and delocalized states, and interface between them. That would give you all this heavy fermion behavior. But how to produce localized delocalized state from the same T to G? Yeah. because it's not split, you see? That is the story. It's not split at all. When I draw that deutrigonal symmetry, T to G should be split into double degenerate, it's not split at all. It's, because splitting is much smaller than bandwidth. So then, what we did is we make transformation from cubic harmonics of T to G and G to new basis set, which is the basis set for trigonal for D3D group symmetry. So that now those phi are basis function of the group D3D, trigonal group, just equivalent transformation. So then, that is the density, partial density of states projected on those new orbitals. That's EG, forget about them. And then we have here T to G. So, as you see, the striking difference between density of state for phi 1 orbital, which is very narrow, and phi 2, phi 3, which is much more broad. What those orbitals are? This phi 1.
You're saying it's a factor of 2 difference in
bandwidth? Bandwidth, yeah.
Only a factor of 2 difference.
Yeah, but it's a lot. Factor of 2. Go on.
No.
Well, if you have, look here, if you have U of order of bandwidth, then factor of 2 is a lot, which will give you on metallic side or on insulating side of more transition.
But you're doing your point group, right? I mean, in the space group, everything is different, it spans and direct orbit.
Yeah, that's just local, I said. Local approximation.
DD or DF or how you call it, which is so important.
No,
far these two point group objects really separated in the bands of your calculation.
No, I just made projection on some local orbital spaces set. Yeah. So, and this F phi 1 is 3 the square minus r square in the local coordinate system where you have the trigonal axis, which is specific for every one of the two octahedra. It's quite complicated. So that for every one of the four octahedra, we choose their own trigonal axis. And then we got this on base order transformation specific for every octahedra.
Why does the system not distort at low wave energy if you have these spaces overlaps?
Well, it's told you local symmetry is trigonal, but then the total symmetry is cubic. It's okay. It's normal. It's no anterior, nothing else. It's just the symmetry of the crystal is such that local symmetry is trigonal and total symmetry is cubic.
Excuse me. How do you understand the structure? Every octahedra share an edge. Every pair.
Yeah. So you have lines of octahedra in this direction, then in that direction. That's the class. Ellen. And so, as we have this now it's a more extended way, this A density of state and E density of state. So that is our first statement, that due to this trigonal splitting, we have not real splitting, because this splitting we estimated it is something like 0.1 eV, and bandwidth is 1.2 eV.
Which one is larger
bandwidth? This one is larger.
Where you put bandwidth?
Okay, so, and then, well, it's possible just to calculate its effective bits, but, so then we did LDA plus U calculation, so we just put U and C, what kind of localization would happen. And natural localization happened on this orbital, which is much more narrow, so we have the solution where one electron was localized on A orbital and the other 0.5 per psi was in relatively broad band.
Do you have this difference between local symmetry and global symmetry as you put in here?
That is just crystallography. Just crystallography, nothing else.
Yeah, yeah. Is it really clear when you say, okay, I have my point group of my crystal, and I can decompose it in all sorts of reproducible representations.
Yeah.
Right? And it should not depend which one I choose for the physical nature of the system.
It's equivalent. It's equivalent.
It's equivalent. So I can just take a translation invariant.
No, look here. That's quite simple. You have, if you just keep yourself on one side, you have only trigonal symmetry. Then if you say that, let us make rotation and translation.
Okay.
Not total translation, but that shift.
Mm-hmm.
So that you rotate and change two equivalent vanadiums.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the operation which would transform crystal into itself, but not particular atom into itself. You see?
Right.
Isn't that the same as the ice, the thin ice compound?
No. In ice you have disorders. Here is everything perfectly ordered.
No, the
spinite
compound.
I'm not crystallographer. I believe to people who say, crystallographer did their job and told me, this is such and such, I believe them. Okay, let me come further. So, and then we did effective Anderson impurity model, where we have one electron localized, this dashed line, in A band and in A orbital, and we have effective hybridization function. So we just mapped our results onto effective Anderson impurity model with one electron localized in A orbitals and half electrons and half of electron producing partially filled conduction band.
What does this exactly mean, Fabio? So I can imagine that you can follow the following procedure.
Mm-hmm.
You do basically sort of a mapping to it by binding Hamiltonian.
No, it is not necessary. We just have Green function from our LDA calculation.
Yeah.
And then in the spirit of dynamical field, we say that let us write down effective impurity.
That gives the same density.
Yes, the same Green function. That's it, nothing more.
I mean, my sort of view is that, I'm not yet convinced in saying that the A orbital can have a real identity in a solid. Right? I mean, point group is not an exact function.
No.
When you say, Anderson, Hamiltonian in general, we do have a problem because even F states and D states and P states don't have a fundamental sense. All you have.
No, he didn't say.
So, what you're basically saying is, there's sort of more of saying there is an identity of the atom still in a solid, so it makes sense to talk about D and F states, etc., can also be applied to the ML state within a particular L shell, right? Now, I like to think that these states are more similar among each other than these states are to F states. I mean, these can be quite clearly dissimilar. So that's sort of the strong claim, right? If you can make out of one D shell a system which is really like a very localized object, a very localized orbital, a very extended orbit. My question is really, when you do this sort of tight binding mapping, that would be an honest way of doing it. You would have a TAA, a TPE, and a TA.
It's not exactly tight binding. You see, formally, we could write down such effective pharmaceutical model and for any kind of a problem. For potassium, just it wouldn't have any sense. But formally, we can write it. So here we write down effective under superiority model and hope that it will give us something.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean,
it's clear what he's doing. He's
yeah, but I'm completely unconvinced because there's...
Well, it's okay, it's okay. I mean, you haven't seen what he got.
Yeah. 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 Well, it's about, you know, there's two ways, besides the LDA. You can get it out of LDA, right?
Yeah, as I told you, formally we could do it, but...
TAB, which is sufficiently small, so it makes sense to say it's like...
And then here, that's the last view graph, so we could finish it. So then, what we get? So, as I told, we did effective Anderson impurity model. So we extracted position of impurity level and hybridization function. Then we asked Thomas Pruschke to make NCA and to extract effective condo energy scale. And we have found the effective condo energy scale was quite large, 500K.
This is now NCA plus U, or...?
No, you see, it's just NCA, because... from LDA, you obtain position of purity level and hybridization function. That's it. You don't have U's here. Oh, no, but you know, but then you make NCA, then you have U. But U is NCA.
NCA has a U in?
Yes, yes. Oh, you mean if it is what infinite U? No, it was not infinite U.
So where did you get that U?
That's from our calculations. From our calculation, we calculated around 3V. Yeah.
But that also enters TK, right? Can you change TK by changing U?
Not in this case, I think, because epsilon F was around 1V. So if you have U3V, it's close to U infinity. If you will increase U, it will not change dramatically results. Well, so then, so Condo exchange would be around 600K, so it's huge. And we suggested the following explanation, how you could have smaller heavy fermion energy or temperature for such large interaction. As we have here one localized D electron and partially delocalized other also D, that's typical situation double exchange, and we calculated exchange parameters with the same approximation which we did for vanadates, which is just as I told mean field, and then we obtained quite strong ferromagnetic direction. So we have competing strong Condo exchange and strong ferromagnetic double exchange. Well, then that's the most crude summation would be around 100, and that would be antiferromagnetic. And that is for high temperature. For high temperatures, you have spin 1/2 and theta Niel, not Niel, it's Weiss temperature for around minus 60, minus 70, for the same order. Well, and then this famous exhaustion phenomenon, which was discussed by Mark and Antoine, would explain us how we could have low coherence temperature from the high Condo scale. That's it. That's all.
So is the how is it with spin anisotropy? I mean, the background of the question is that I wouldn't use any third base of this kind for dual exchange for a Spielmann half system. The dual exchange is a wrong concept for Spielmann half, except when you're very anisotropic spins, very icy like spin sets.
Anisotropic or anisotropic here? You see, it was paramagnetic. Our question was paramagnetic.
Yeah, it's not about calculation, but you know, one is sort of the spin orbital coupling and huge spin.
No. We didn't use spin orbital and anything. It was all was quite crude estimations, you see. A lot of steps were not justified.
Spin half iceberg spins doesn't make sense. It's just more physics. No one has ever seen.
See, we just tried to show, to demonstrate that it is possible, at least we didn't prove it, but it is possible to obtain this condor system from T to G states. To just show that one of the possible ways to obtain condor system from T to G.
Yeah.
That's it. It's all quite crude estimations. While for the first part of my talk, I would say that I could estimate the error and say that it's not more than this and that. Here, everything up is order of magnitude.
Yeah.
Nothing more.
Why doesn't this material order then? Why doesn't it go into
ferromagnetic? Because you have competing. You see, you have condor. Here. Condor is not just anti-ferromagnetic.
Condor wins. Yeah. I mean, it's competition.
Yeah.
RKKY, condor and condor wins.
Yes, condor wins. Yes.
But it's not a condor system, right? It's a Fermi liquid system.
It's a heavy fermion.
Well, you have condor lattice, you see.
It's a more like a heavy fermion.
Yes. So we have condor lattice, and then what would be from condor lattice of what temperature?
For heavy fermions, this is not very heavy.
Estimations are that's quite close to normal data for cerium compounds.
It's like UPC3. Okay, I understand.
Gamma 400. Yeah. There's only a couple more.
Yeah. So it's sufficiently heavy.
Yeah.
Sufficiently heavy. Yeah.
Yeah, it is heavy.
Yeah. So you see here. I don't state anything firmly, just demonstrate that, look here, so unusual, unexpected explanation could be presented, but we do not prove it.
One problem is how I've seen local structural measurement of this, and it doesn't look very cubic local.
I mean, it's cubic.
Well, not cubic. Cubic. There are distortions in the system that don't agree with the average crystal structure.
Maybe. You see, I did not follow it. I didn't.
I don't know. So then, if you put this in a band structure calculation, which has an input the atomic positions.
So you claim that this Spinel is distorted?
Yeah.
I never heard of it. If you give me a reference, I will look at it. Yeah. Because Johnson spent a lot of time on here.
Well, X ray scattering. You don't very easily see.
It is quite possible, possible. But sorry, if it's all distortion, they shouldn't be large.
You can't be a little bit pregnant. I mean, I can't tell us, Gregory,
you're pregnant.
I don't understand this.
It's like in the magnets. You do have
local distortion, but basically it's cubic.
You get an average structure when you measure crystallographically in S of Q, but locally the atoms fluctuate around their positions.
Well, it's interesting, it's quite possible.
Harmonic fluctuations.
Well, it would be very, very interesting, because that could possibly explain something, we have that localization. As soon as you have localization, then you could have some distortion, so it would be interesting to see the results. Maybe they will support my model. So that's it.